Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by going to our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon on the homepage or the iTunes icon and download them from there. I have with me today a Canadian writer from Ottawa, Canada, and his name is Paul Mackin. His first book, The Cockamamie World of A. Yold, is newly published by Publish America and came out October the 6th, 2008. A. Yold is a fictional character he created based upon a Yiddish word yold, meaning a native gullible dolt. It takes the form of diary notes of fads and fashions he observes while under his desk in the Ottawa Civil Service. It's a small book of wit and wonder, which I highly recommend. And now I'd like to welcome to the program Paul Mackin. Paul, how are you doing today?
Hello to you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Paul, thanks very much for coming on Authors Audio today. You're an interesting guy. You're an actor. You are a professional musician, and now you're also an author. So maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
I started off in life as a church organist, but always with an intense interest in theater. And I met a woman in Detroit, Michigan, who was teaching at a big Catholic college there and doing interesting things, and somebody introduced me to her, and 47 years later we were still together. She was a professionally trained Broadway actor and trained me in her approaches. And one time we were having a production and the professional PR people had written a release, and I read it and I said, gee, this is dull. And she said, well, you write it then. And so I did. And she said to me, you're a writer. And that began the sort of late-blooming career, if you like, of me trying to become a writer. And, of course, she was my best and severest critic and shaped me. And so that's how I got into writing. Now, I was doing freelance work with CBC Radio here in Ottawa, speaking in my normal Irish background voice. And I thought I was doing rather well in humor pieces. And one day I was reading a piece to a producer, and she was laughing her head off. And then at the end of the piece, she looked at me and she said of the person I was writing about, you make me feel sorry for him. And she didn't buy the piece. And that threw me for a terrible loop. And I thought, I've lost my voice. I've become too bitter and sarcastic. And sometime later, a friend sent me a little book called Hooray for Yiddish. And all the Yiddish phrases were explained by jokes. And when I came across this word yold, meaning a naive, credulous kind of person, a sweetheart, really, I thought, there's the voice I'm looking for, because there's the humor with the bite just under the surface. And so I began to experiment with that, and I turned Yold into a character, and he became so real to me, still is real to me, and I speak of him as a real person in my acquaintance. And that's how the book came about. It was originally written for CBC Radio, and I had sent a rough recording to the producer of the morning show, and he wrote me a note back and said, you intrigue me. Can you break this down into 13 three-minute pieces and consider it sold? So I did, went in to record it, and I didn't realize that, how would I realize, that one of the assistant producers sent up to monitor the recording studio was Jewish. And she took the material to the Jewish Community Center, and they said, no, we no longer want to be represented by that little naive voice. And so CBC backed off. And only two of the pieces were ever broadcast. But that again set me back for a long, long time. I put it away, and then every once in a while I got it back out and reworked this and tweaked that. And then finally, after all these years, I said, I'm going to get this published, and that's it. And so I did. And that's how it came about. I hope that wasn't too long-winded an answer.
No, that's great, Paul. I appreciate your information. This book, The Cockamamie World of A. Yold, it's not a large book, but it's very finely done. It contains a lot of Yiddish phrases, and Paul has been smart enough or kind enough to include a little Yiddish dictionary in the book, so people that either want to learn a little bit more about that those words can look them up in the book and appreciate it, because Yiddish is a very, very tightly formed kind of language. It's extremely, there's a lot of meaning in each word. It's multi-leveled kind of thing,
somewhere
I think.
Around there.
So, but you actually were an actor and worked with your Sarah Lee for quite a long time, didn't you, Paul? And maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, too.
Well, I began in Hamilton, where I mostly was raised. I was born in Niagara Falls, and then the family moved to Hamilton, and that's where I spent a lot of my first years. And I was co-founder of a community theater group there. And then some of us decided to go to Toronto to study professionally in order to enrich the work of the group. And we went down to what was then known as the New Play Society and worked with the great Dora Maver Moore. And then, of course, when I met my Sarah Lee, she was Stanislavski trained. And so I had the Toronto training and her training mixed. I felt that that has enriched me no end. But usually I like to take on small roles in films where I get maybe a day or two shoot have a small character that I can build nicely and leave it at that. I'm no longer interested in major stardom or fame or anything like that. I just want to practice the art of theater. And my Sarah Lee died of Alzheimer's just recently. And so for almost 5 years, I was out of the market, as it were, and because I couldn't leave her. And so now, having been offered this little cameo role in Look Back in Anger, it's the perfect way for me to get my feet wet again, because I have only one scene, and it's about 7 minutes long, very intense, and, so I can start sharpening up my techniques in that small way and not have to have the weight of a long role overpowering me at this stage of comeback, as it were.
That's great, Paul. What theater venue will you be working at in Ottawa?
Well, the producers are called the Third Wall Theater here in Ottawa, and they're performing in the Studio Theater at the brand new Irving Greenberg Theater Center, which is the new home of the Great Canadian Theater Company. It's a wonderful facility, beautifully designed, and it's a wonderful place to perform.
Well, that sounds really great, Paul. Congratulations for that. You know, I always say that everything can happen if you live long enough. Now, this is a brand new book, right, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's published this year.
Maybe we could talk a little bit about how you get your ideas, how you work as a writer as opposed to your acting career. Maybe our listeners would like to know a little bit more about your craft and how you do that.
As for where I draw the material, the course in creative writing that I give in adult education, I call Write the World Around You, because that's where my inspiration comes from. Observations on a bus, in a restaurant, in church, people's body language, anything can create a story idea in my head. And when it begins to bother me to the point that I know I have to start writing, that's when the trouble begins, because for me anyway, facing that blank page is terror. Because I'm the only person in the world who believes in the words I'm about to put down. And that scares me. And so I have to sit at the computer and just start and let it all pour out, do no editing at all until it's all out, and then let it sit for a couple of days at least, and then go back and start to look at it, because writing is in the rewriting. And so you begin to read this over and you say, oh my God, did I actually say that? And out it goes, you know. And, oh, that's a good sentence, you know.
Well, yes, I'm sure that's the great terror for every writer or painter or artist of any kind, really, Paul. Once you get the juices flowing, even if you start off by writing your name down, then ideas start to come, and I guess that's the way for most of us.
That's right, and most of those connections you never thought were there, I find, come from the character you're writing about, who becomes so real that he or she will suddenly say to you, as if out loud, I'm sorry, I won't say that. You want to say that, you go ahead and say it, but I won't, and I'm out of here. And all your ideas for the structure of the story have to be given a second or maybe a third look, because the character is beginning to speak for him or herself, and you must go with it. You must give in to it.
Now, your book is really a series of little short stories of vignettes about your character and the adventures of A. Yold. And I'm just wondering, when you're writing it, whether this was made it easier for you to do, to concentrate on one character, or was it more difficult?
It freed me no end, because I realized that with my imagination, I could do this. And as the more I read about Yiddish phrases and expressions and experiences, the more I realized, let me put it this way. Some years ago, my Sarah Lee and I were working in Michigan giving workshops, and someone gave her a book called How to Be a Jewish Mother. Now, I was up in my part of the studio one night, and I could hear this roaring laughter coming from the other end of the building from her room. And the next morning, she gave the book to me to read, and I read it that night. And the following morning, she said to me, I didn't hear any laughter. And I said, Sarah Lee, that woman raised me. We Irish have exactly the same experience of the load of guilt. You know, my mother would say, will you have some more of this stew? And I would say, well, actually, I've had enough. Oh, you didn't like it? I said, I loved it. Well, then have some more. Well, no, I can't. Oh, so you didn't like it. You know, that kind of thing went on and on and on and on and on. And so that experience tuned me in when I began to think of Yold. I began to think of myself as him. And then he began to take over and say, well, no, your pronunciation there is a little goyisher. You say it this way. And he became so real to me, and still is. I don't know whether, have I just answered your question or gone crazy?
No, Paul, I think you're still in the world of the sane, you know, as much as all artists can be in the world of the sane. But your writing is very concise and well-focused, and that's probably because, in a sense, you decided to that being the character was far more freeing than looking at it somewhat remotely. And I think that makes the book work really well. Who are some of your influences that helped you along in terms of thinking about writing and writers?
Who do I like? I'm addicted to murder mysteries. And my favorite at the moment is Ian Rankin of Scotland, who creates characters full of levels and ambivalences and weaknesses as well as strengths. And you never know at any point in his stories which is going to take over, the weakness or the strength. Of course, Alice Munro and Mordecai Richler is like a god to me. I often cringe when I hear people on the television asking, when are we going to get the great Canadian novel? And I look at Solomon Gursky was here and a few things like that, and I think, we've already got it. Open your eyes, you know. But that's my personal prejudice. Alice Munro is a phenomenal writer, and again has that quality you spoke of being so concise in her use of language, and yet you get the full depth of her characters and their motivations, and you know, it makes reading a real pleasure.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. As I've loved reading from a very small child, really. But today, what I find is what a lot of writers are competing with is just a whole panoply of different intrusions into the world of writing and reading books. And, of course, those are things like, you know, we have our computers now, we have the internet, we have cell phones, and it just goes on and on, video games and so on and so forth. And I really find it a kind of a critical thing that kids today get into reading early in life so that they can understand just the real enjoyment of saturating themselves in a book. And I think you've accomplished this in your wonderful, magical book, A Yold, and it's concise, but it's a lot of fun, and that's what reading should be.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, I agree with you. The book, we have to find a way to make our books command the attention of distracted people, to get their attention back. I mean, even in television, to make an odd comparison, I find I can't watch the news anymore because it's so boring. You know, this massive set that tells you who the masters are, and nothing can be said or done except through their voices. And I'm tired of their voices, and tired of the what my Sara Lee used to call lies told by liars. And so I've pretty much stopped watching news programs at all, because I just find nothing of interest. And I choose a couple of good magazines that I think are good anyway. I read Harper's and I read The New Yorker. And through them, I get a very good picture of what's going on in the world.
Well, so much for the news and the world and how we get it, that's for sure, Paul. A question that I should bring up, your character is often under the desk of his office in the civil service. Have you ever worked for the civil service yourself?
Who, me? No. The closest I came was as an actor. For 9 summers, I played the historic role of Lord Aberdeen, the 7th Governor General of Canada, in the Senate of Canada for the tourists that came through. That was the closest I ever came to being a civil servant. And that was a wonderful experience. But no, and the other thing I'd like to remark on also is that those real characters that I mentioned in my satire, I have never met in person. I have based my knowledge of them strictly on their public persona. For example, I have one story centered around a now retired radio personality here in Ottawa, and I didn't meet him in person until long after I'd written the story, but I based my judgment of him strictly on what he sounded like on the radio. And that happened throughout the whole book. I never met any of the prime ministers I talk about. I've never been in the same room with them. But strictly listening to their speeches and watching their body language and so on and so forth, I made my own characters up. So it's a fictionalization of them rather than a true representation.
I know that writing short stories is very often like writing a new book every chapter, because it's a completely different story in itself. And I'm just wondering how long it took you to sort of put the ideas and the chapters in your book, and how long did it take to actually complete it?
I wrote the original work in the mid-80s, and then, as I said, I put it away and kept picking it out and working this and reworking that. And then I updated it into the early 90s, And then I thought, okay, I can't do anything further with this right now. I've got to get a public reaction to it. And so I went seriously then searching for a publisher. I had searched earlier and been turned down time after time after time, and becoming more and more depressed while I went on with other writing. Then finally, this Publish America picked it up within a week and did quite a credible job of putting it together.
Well, I guess my next question is because, you know, getting your book out and getting it published and having it out in the world is so invigorating. Are you working on a new book right now, Paul?
Yes, I am. I'm working on a story of suspense where the most innocent things suddenly take on a terrifying reality. And it has to do with an actress in Toronto who suddenly is receiving no calls from her agent. Every time she goes to a meeting, somebody shows up to work on the telephone. That kind of thing, you know.
Paul Mackin, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you from Ottawa today about your new book, and it's just out, called The Cockamamie World of A. Yuld. I'm wondering if you would favor us with perhaps a little bit of reading from the book, just to give the listeners a taste of the writing in this book.
His Aunt Mildred is a most interesting character, so I'll read you a bit of her. Do you remember the last time you were sent to your room without supper? For me, it's like yesterday. Actually, it was yesterday. My Aunt Mildred banished me because suddenly I sneezed as she was serving the schnitzel. Go to your room, she orders me. My room is, you guessed it, halfway across Ottawa on a cold winter's day. Me, I figure a person has a cold could use a little sympathy, a little chicken soup, a little mothering on the side. But you put the sneeze on Aunt Mildred, you won't get mothering, you'll get maced, her handy can of Lysol she keeps where other women put perfume. Aunt Mildred's cleavage contains more firepower than Base Camp Petawawa. She will have what she calls no truck with persons thoughtless enough to catch a cold. Thoughtless, schmuttless, a person catches a cold on purpose. Yes, says Aunt Mildred, and with her you don't argue. You call a cab. You hold up the receiver, she maces it with the bomb in her bosom. You get your coat, she sprays the closet. Why not? She sprayed the schnitzel. As you reach for the door, she warns, put your gloves before you touch on the doorknob. And then with a final fogging from the warm side, she calls, I'm throwing you out from here, a kiss, darling. Take care, take a warm bath, take aspirin. But she is really saying, take off. It isn't right. But with Aunt Mildred, you don't have rights. You have germs, is what you have. Such an experience, let me tell you. You feel the great Canadian majority who voted against free trade, and you're out in the cold, and you're asking, how come? As for how come such as Aunt Mildred can go through a whole Canadian winter not catching a cold, don't ask. Maybe, I thought, she has a little something special in her genes. She not only laid that idea to rest, she laid it out. Real women, darling, never but never wear jeans. Aunt Mildred is what the French call formidable. She is Canadian, conservative, period. Mildred is a patriot. She is very proud. Her husband died this year in the service of Canada. Proud, she cavils. She volunteered him. It was the day the federal election campaign was going funny. Ed Broadbent announced that maybe the NDP will be the official opposition. Mildred decided this was not a fate Canada deserved. She decided her husband, my uncle Mildred, is to postpone his scheduled prostate surgery. Instead, he should fly off like a Canada goose to Germany, Japan, negotiate an international financial crisis long enough the people should wake up. Then he flew straight to Hollywood to buy a new media message for Mulroney. To Mildred, he's a mensch. And before his time, he died of prostration. Like me, Mildred was born a yold, but she assimilated. Even as a young girl, she was goy crazy. In her natural state, among her own, she could be a princess. For Mildred, that is not good enough. Mildred wanted Queen. She never made it. Her son, my cousin Robert, he made it. Mildred imagines herself the spirit emeritus of the IODE. She walks around, whispers to herself, the empire lives. Over her bed, she put a portrait of Margaret Thatcher with under it the legend, the empire strikes back. So how Mildred-type persons get through the Canadian winter, they don't catch a cold? What's to wonder is how a Mildred-type person can make you feel so guilty for something is not your fault, days and year. What do we lesser Canadians do we should deserve such a fate? Me? I go to lunch at Vaughn's. I get to a table without turning a single head. The waiter, a nice young Mr. Up-and-comer, has a good sneeze over the serving table. He politely covers his mouth. Then he picks up my coffee without first washing his hands. And for this he expects a tip. I wander through the wonders of Ontario Fruitland. In comes such a nice young couple. In honor of the minus 40 it is outside, they are wearing tennis shoes. What they are not wearing is, they are not wearing hats. I am not unreasonable. I can understand they wouldn't want to cover their hair. It is, after all, in five colors and pointing in that many directions. So they sneeze over the Granny Smith. So what? So much for an apple a day is what. Imagine. Actually, you don't have to imagine. It happened. And I, with my dumb luck, was there. A winter's day, cold, freeze the nuts off a steel bridge. Let me tell you, out of the bank comes a guy. He is hatless. Why? Because he is young is why. His overpriced bomber jacket is open. Why? Because he's a sartorial smartmick is why. On his feet are leather loafers and white socks. Why? I'm guessing here, but by this we are to know that he is not a complete social misfit. His T-shirt carries the legend, I'd rather be in the Bahamas. Finally, something we could agree on, I'd rather he was in the Bahamas, too. Two steps out of the bank, he stops. His concave chest heaves. His arms dangle at his side. His mouth opens and his sneeze sprays 15 passers-by and turns a public phone into a deadly weapon. The guy's a menace to society. Yet him we let loose on our streets. Clifford Olson we lock up. I'm visiting in the hospital. I see the head nurse comes to her station. She blows her nose. She sniffles. Again she blows. Two damp little tissues are passed into her uniform pocket. Nope. Does this healthcare professional sterilize her hands? No. She picks up instead a paper cup of special medicine marked for old Mrs. Bubba Lincoln intensive care. She floats down the corridor with this medicine, which by her hands is no longer medicine, it is a biological weapon. This scene has become, from the comic strip Pogo, Florence McNightingale and her deadly lampshade. For this scene, the script reads, Gesundheit and good night, Mrs. Bubbalink. The supermarket, the library, nowhere are we safe from this germ warfare. It is Canada's most gross national product.
Well, listen, Paul, that was really great, and thank you so much for reading a portion of the book. I think that, for me personally, I love audiobooks for that reason, because it's so nice to listen, especially to the author actually reading their own work. I find that to be very enticing and relaxing. So again, I want to thank you for taking the time out today to appear on Authors Audio. And I know that your book can be had at Amazon.com and also at local bookstores. You just asked for The Cockamamie World of A. Yold, and I'm sure there's only one of them out there, and that would be from the author Paul Mackin from Ottawa, a great Canadian personality and writer.
Thank you for asking me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Paul. Thanks so much. This wraps up another edition of Authors Audio, and my name is Jake D. Steele. You can listen to all our interviews by visiting our website again at www.authorsaudio.com and just click on the listen icon or the iTunes icon, and you can listen to all the interviews from there. So until next time, I say to all my listeners, keep dreaming and happy reading. This is Jake D. Steele saying bye for now.